Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the Ecom Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven and eight figure brands build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, I'm joined by a man who spent 15 years at Pura Vida Bracelets, building out their wholesale program to over 30 million, I think 35 million-ish per year, to talk about wholesale. And in a world where Facebook's getting harder, Amazon is squeezing your margins, Google is not giving, you know, any extra margin as well, having your own channels for distribution, for customer acquisition is super important, which is why when I got a recommendation to talk with Jared from someone I trust about wholesale, I said, yeah, let's do it. So wholesale, as important as it is probably not the world's most riveting topic, at least until you start seeing those dollars come in. So we focused really hard on making a tight sub 30-minute crash course primer on everything you need to know to get started with wholesale. So I was super impressed with Jared in the amount of ground he covered and the amount of time it would probably take you or less to watch a Seinfeld episode. Probably dating myself here. It's a great series. If you're young and you haven't gone back through the archives, strongly recommend. Anyway, I digress. Anyway, hope you enjoy it. It's a fantastic crash course on wholesale, and we're going to get right into it. I want to start with talking about your background quickly at Pura Vida. A lot of people probably are familiar with them. They were still are a large bracelet brand, did a lot in revenue, fairly well known. And you took, I believe you took their wholesale, you were with them for a long time, maybe 15 years. You can correct me if I'm off on any of this, but you took their wholesale from like zero to what, 30 million? Is that right?
Yeah, just under 35 million. We were doing it annually. So lifetime sales over 150. I was there for 15 years. It was an amazing journey. Sold a lot of string.
And were you wholesale? Were you focused on the wholesale side that entire period, or was that something you focused on kind of during the later half of your tenure there?
I was focused on that the entire time. So when my two buddies, I was living with these two guys, Griff and Paul, when they brought home a trash bag full of string back in 2010, put it online and started selling it. A few months later, I was just like, guys, let me figure this out. Let me sell these things to stores. Didn't know what I was doing, just kind of wanted to wing it. So yeah, I did that for 15 years up until about 4 months ago when I had just left.
That's crazy. And what percentage of roughly what percentage of the company's business came from wholesale? Because I always thought of it as a primarily D2C company, but that's a very meaningful part of wholesale. So was that one of the legs of the stool, or was that a huge driver for the business?
Yeah. So honestly, up until about COVID, so probably the first 10 years, we were 80-20, 75-25 e-com to wholesale. Post-COVID, post-iOS change, it definitely became more impactful on the business. You know, right when I left about 3-4 months ago, it was about 65-35, almost 60-40 e-com to wholesale. So it became a much bigger part since we've had these iOS changes. Facebook's a little bit more diluted. It's just harder selling online.
You know, I mentioned this at the very top, and we were talking about it, but wholesale seems like it's such the reason, one of the two big reasons I wanted to have you on talk about this is this is one of the few ways you can meaningfully build out a defensible sales channel. It takes a while, but that's not at the whims of Zuckerberg or Google or the algorithms, or something you actually can control and, you know, you can sleep a little better at night with. And I imagine that's a huge part of why you're getting into this full time on your own.
Yeah. I mean, you nailed it. Like, it's really hard as a business. I know e-commerce is the way of the future and, you know, brands are super focused on it. It's tough to have a business that, you know, we laugh about it, but it depends on Mark Zuckerberg's mood that day, right? Like when you're so reliant on Facebook ads and, you know, your website, and you don't have another leg of the business to stand on, not only does that feel a little bit unhealthy, but if you're looking to one day exit and sell the company, like these bigger brands, these bigger companies that are acquiring smaller companies, they want you to have multiple legs to stand on. So if you're just one lane e-commerce, DTC only, it's just not as appealing sometimes as these brands that have a wholesale channel and maybe even a retail channel where they're selling their own, it's their own store.
Yeah. I have a bunch of questions about wholesale. Can you, before I dive into those, I'm guessing a handful you'll answer for me right out of the gates. What is the quick and dirty playbook for building out a great wholesale program? However you want to tackle that, maybe that, you know, top 3 to 5 steps, or what are the things, you know, if you had to tell someone, if you had, you know, 3 minutes, 2 to 3 minutes on an airplane going down, well, you wouldn't be telling them how to build a whole stack.
Yeah, we'd probably be talking about something else, I think.
I gotta work on my analogies here.
Yeah.
2 to 3 minutes. What's the high level playbook for making this work?
Yeah, I think one of my biggest things that I approach brands with when they come to me wanting wholesale is I'm like, look, there's a few things that you need right off the bat. You need an elevator pitch, and you need an elevator pitch that's going to relate to a retailer, right? So you have this brand, you know, let's say that you're a swim brand, for example, you're a bikini brand. Like, I think if you approach retailers and you are to say, hey, we have super high Google searches, our conversion rate's really good, XYZ, it's not going to really appeal to a retailer. Whereas if you can say, hey, our product is backed by these two influencers, we do drops every month that sell out, and all of our customers are looking to buy our products in a store because this brand is better when you touch and feel it in person. That's going to relate much, much better. So I think the first biggest thing is like the elevator pitch. What can you tell these guys? Why is your product great? And why is it going to sell in their store? That's number one. Number two, make sure you have the margins to be able to sell this product. For round numbers, if you have a product that sells for $20 online, you need to sell it to this retailer for at least $10, ideally $8, maybe $9, give them a little extra margin. So if you can't make that work, if that doesn't make sense with your margins, you probably can't explore wholesale yet. So I think if you can check those two off the box, great, you're ready to go. From there, I would say figure out what types of stores you want to go after, right? So like if you are a surf brand, where do we want to be seen? We want to be seen in surf shops. We want to be seen in women's stores and boutiques. If you are, for example, if you're a keychain brand or, you know, a key ring, where do you want to be? Gift shops, hotel gift shops, national parks. So I would pave a path of where you want to be, because you don't want to just be a product and go, hey, here we are, we're going to sell to everything. Because then you might get, do you want to be in 7-Eleven? Do you want to be in CVS? Which is cool. Maybe you do. But I think you just have to know, because if you want to sell to high-end boutiques, but then you also sell to something like TJ Maxx, Target, et cetera, it's not going to work. They're going to compete and no one's going to carry you.
Yeah, so on a margin perspective, you need at least 75% margins, ideally probably 80% plus to make this work, right?
Correct. Because not only are you selling these products at wholesale pricing, you also have to factor in when you go to hire sales reps and you're paying them a commission of 8% or 10% or 12%. So you need to have that buffer.
Yeah. How do you, sales reps, how do you build this portfolio out? I mean, the two ways for someone who has not done this before that immediately come to mind, trade shows and cold calling, either on the phone or in person, I'm guessing mostly on the phone. Am I thinking about that right? Are those actually going to be the two most effective strategies for this?
Correct. So when we first built Pura Vida's wholesale, we just smile and dialed. We were just dialing for dollars, right? So we're hopping online, and a couple like really cool tips that I can give to people that are kind of starting out is find brands in your space, whether that's like if you're a jewelry brand, find another jewelry brand, or if you're a t-shirt, find another one. Go to their store locator on their site and scrape that information. That will literally give you a free leads list of exactly where you want to be. So once you get that, you just pick up the phone, start calling, start emailing, sending samples out, following up, doing it that way. Like you had said in the beginning, right? Like wholesale is definitely a more manual process, but it's extremely rewarding once you can get that going. So that's route A. And that's kind of what I recommend most for brands starting out. Now, I think sales rep wise, I think it's great. But I think one thing that brands get wrong sometimes is they go sales reps too early. Why is it too early? I think something about sales reps that brands get wrong when they're first starting out is a common misconception is that you launch a brand and you're just like, hey, let me find some sales reps and they're just going to plug me into all their stores and it's going to be easy. Problem here is that sales reps have a finite amount of time in a day. And so if they rep 5 brands, or if it's a showroom and they have 10 brands in the showroom and they have 1 hour of this buyer's time, they're going to take them to the brands that make them the most money. They don't have the time to pitch the buyer on your brand, to tell the story, to get them on it. They're just selling what works. And so I think what works better is to build that foundation yourself, because nobody can tell the story like you can. Nobody's spending 8 hours a day on selling your product and your product only. And you build a foundation of retailers and stores and people carrying the line. And all of a sudden, before you know it, the good reps come to you versus you begging the good reps.
Any tips on the cold calling front? I imagine that's a fairly intimidating thing, especially when you're getting started. And I imagine there's a decent amount of rejection there. What any big tips for A, who you ask for, and B, you already mentioned like have a good story, but what are some of the mistakes people make when they start reaching out as founders, proof of concept, to start, you know, trying to get up these wholesale accounts on the phone?
Yeah, honestly, something that really worked for me that I still tell brands to do is post on your Instagram and just say, hey, where would you guys like to see our brand? What stores? Tell me your favorite store near you. Get a bunch of responses, screenshot them. And when you reach out to the buyer, you can literally tell them, hey, our fans have told us they want to see our product in your store. Can I send you some samples? It's easy. I mean, it's truly just like you're almost promising them business. And what's cool is that these stores are always looking for new brands. They're always looking for the next best brand. These legacy brands, for example, I don't know, let's just say a surf shop reference, the Billabong, the Quiksilver, the Ruka, like these brands, they've been carrying this for 30 years. People want newness. And so it's just such a great time for all of these e-commerce brands to kind of slide in and be the new thing.
How do you think about building a portfolio of wholesale customers? Because on one hand, if you have 1,000 small shops, you get fantastic diversity of your portfolio, right? You lose a few, it's not going to hurt. But the time and the effort of shipping them out, of dealing with collectibles, you know, collections, all this stuff, it's a huge hassle. The flip side of that is maybe you're in two big box stores, maybe you're in Target and Walmart. Fantastic from a PO size, but you're probably going to get nailed on the terms, right? It takes a long time to get them. You got to put a ton of work up front. They're probably going to extract, you know, 5 pints of blood in terms of payment terms and putting back the returns to you and stuff they can't sell. So where is the sweet spot between trying to think about what size stores to balance those two things?
Yeah. So there's a lot of pros and cons with both. So I think with the mom and pops, the smaller, the one door chain, the two door chain, the pros are that they pay up front most of the time. You're getting their credit card right before you ship. They're easy. They're easy to deal with. You're talking directly with the buyer. They want to reorder. They're hitting you up directly. Done. Obviously, now the con is the orders are smaller. Now, with the big box, the pros, like you mentioned, you get a massive PO, right? $200,000, $300,000 in one. Amazing. But there are cons. The cons are most of them aren't going to pay you for 60 days. Some of them even 90. So as a small business, like to float 200, 300K worth of inventory for 90 days, it's killer. Some people can't even do it. The other side is that they might tell you, hey, we want to roll you out to 50 doors or 100 doors or 200 doors, ship it in 2 months. 2 weeks before you go to ship it, hey, we had a rough quarter. We're going to slim that down to 20 doors. Well, now you're stuck with all the product that you ordered for them. So I think both have pros and cons. Now, sweet spot, I think what you should do is develop a baseline of these mom and pops, these one store chains, these two store chains. So you have a foundation. That way you can go after the bigger guy. And if something were to happen and they slim down the order, well, you have 500 other stores you can sell the product to.
Hey, it's Andrew here with a quick sidebar. I want to introduce you to Ori from industrialstores.com. I met Ori at a Shopify event. Oh man, maybe 6-7 years ago. It was a period where I got the insane and the very poor decision of visiting like 10 cities in 10 days to host meetups. And Toronto was near the end of the event. And anyway, met him there, become friends since. And he's one of the kindest and nicest and just best people I know. And here's what he has to say about his experience with eCommerce Fuel, our private embedded community for 7- and 8-figure founders.
The connection with people through the forum and the events and ECF Live each year is just so impactful. I've made friends and connections and built a support network all around the world through ECF, and the ability to just reach out through the forums, the local events, and ECF Live, the annual event, is just mind-blowing what it's done for me. So I think that is the most valuable.
After hearing literally hundreds of comments like this over the last decade our community's been around, it's easy to offer our 10x guarantee. If you don't get at least a 10x ROI on your membership in the first year, in terms of increased revenue, saved time, and saved money, we'll give you a full refund plus an extra $1,000. But many of our members report seeing massive value in just the first month or two when applying it to their 7- or 8-figure business. You can learn more about the community and apply for membership at ecommercefuel.com. Okay, back to the show. From a managing all this perspective, let's say you're the average e-commerce store that is probably going to be running on Shopify or Shopify Plus. How do you best think about managing an entire wholesale portfolio with tracking POs, with payments, with all this kind of stuff? Can you make Shopify work for it for your needs? You probably can starting out, but what's your recommended tech stack for making this work efficiently? Because it's different than B2C.
Yeah, definitely. Shopify actually has a wholesale type plugin, a wholesale type interface that you can use that works directly with your normal Shopify for e-com. The other thing you can do, honestly, when you're just getting started and you're scrappy, is plug some of these orders directly into QuickBooks. That's what we did. We managed them through QuickBooks. Shopify wasn't around when we first started doing wholesale, so we kind of had to do that. And lastly, there's a ton of really good B2B platforms out there. For example, RepSpark is one of them. NuORDER is another one. Elastic is another one, where you pay basically, you create a whole interface of wholesale, essentially a wholesale website. All your products are there. Your customers are there. They place orders, order history, tracking, all of that lives in there. So in terms of interfaces and software, there's a lot of options out there that make it very easy to manage.
Do any of those tools also have databases of retailers that you can search and kind of give you like very easy, like, hey, I'm selling, you know, this awesome swim trunks or surf trunks. Show me all the surf shops between, you know, these sizes and these areas. Here's the phone numbers for quick reach out. Is that part of the, any of their suites?
Yeah, what's called a marketplace. And so a couple of those do for sure. RepSpark has one of those where you sign up and you can join the marketplace. Buyers can find you. You can find buyers. There's another one called Fair, has gotten really popular in the last couple of years, where you can put your products on Fair. Retailers hop on, they find you, they place orders. So it's definitely getting easier now and a little less manual than it was 5-10 years ago. So it's really helpful for starting out. I think, to be completely honest, it's tough to really scale on something like that and really grow. But I think it's something like Fair is a great starting out point.
How many trade shows do you think you went to during your tenure at Pura Vida?
I'm pushing probably 150, 160. So I was on the circuit, man. At one point, I left my house, I think January 5th, and I did like 4 back-to-back trade shows. I was in New York, Orlando, New York again, and then Atlanta. And I got home like in the beginning of February. It was crazy. I never did that again. It was too much. But yeah, I was going to, I would say, 5 or 6 trade shows every January, February, and then another, the same 5 or 6 July, August, September, because usually they work twice a year in the different seasons.
So you have a lot of reps in. What doesn't work? What does work? Does giving the free swag work? Like what things should you avoid that people think work, and what things should people actually do to be able to start conversations and close accounts?
Yeah, I think giving something out is great, but I think it needs to be something that has to do with your product. So for example, I think if you're a t-shirt brand, giving out pens is not, I think it's just kind of old school, to be honest with you. But if you can give out maybe tote bags that have your logo on it that the buyer can use when they walk around, that's a lot more beneficial. Now, if you have a jewelry brand, you know, like we did, we gave out a bracelet, but we gave out our lowest cost, our lowest margin bracelet. So it wasn't a huge expense to us. But I think what you can do is if you're a surf brand, is make a bunch of trucker hats and give them out. Like there's options to where you don't have to actually give out an expensive product, but you can give out something that makes sense with your brand.
Yeah. And then display building, how big of a key is, obviously there you can give away things to bring people in, but what really pulls people in, is it, how important is the display? How important is just having someone who's really comfortable talking to people? What are some of the other parts of that equation?
Yeah. So I think building out the trade show booth to kind of match the vibe of your brand and the vibe that you're trying to portray and tell a story. We always looked at our trade show booth as kind of an extension of our e-commerce store. You know, our vibe of our brand was beachy, was vacation. So we literally had burlap tablecloths. We had a picnic bench. We had Adirondack chairs. We wanted it to be an extension of the brand and make people feel like they were living Pura Vida. So I think what works in terms of your booth is, even if you have a 10 by 10, get a fake plant, get a fake tree, go to Target, go on Amazon, order some decor, make buyers feel like they're a part of the brand when they're there, stand out, graphics with colors. I think that works. I think being comfortable getting told no is a big thing, right? Like when you go to give out a product, when you go to say hi to someone, when you want to ask them if they want a sample of your sunscreen, you're going to get a lot of no's. Don't take it personally. That's life, right? Like not everyone's going to want it, but you are going to get some yeses and those make it all worth it.
Speaking of that, on the cold call side, for someone who's a complete noob, has not done this, what is a decent close rate for cold calling? Are we talking like you get 1%, you should be happy, or 5 to 10%? I would have no idea how to baseline this. So what do you think is realistic?
Yeah, that's pretty funny. It's kind of hard to baseline it, honestly, like in comparison to, I would say, tech sales or real estate cold calls. I think when you really kind of look into it, 5 to 10% is really good because all these orders are significant, right? Like one order might be $1,000 to $2,000. So that's worth it. And then that store now carries your line and then they reorder and then they reorder every season. So in terms of percentage, I don't have an exact percentage, but I would say if every one or two people out of 10 bring in the line, you're crushing it.
Yeah. Do you always offer to send samples when you're doing cold call?
If you can swing it with your product, I would say yes. It's another reason why trade shows are so beneficial to people in this business, because people want to touch and feel your product. They want to see it in person. If you can get them a sample, even if they have to send it back, you include shipping back, you pick it up if it's a local store, it just really, really helps seal that deal.
And what about terms and returns? So maybe we talk terms first. Obviously, the terms are going to vary based on how big the client is, how savvy and experienced they are. But what should you be, what are the big things you should be thinking about, and what are reasonable terms? And maybe the big ones we can talk about are payment terms, you know, in terms of cash up front versus, you know, net 30, 60, 90, and also the ability to put back to you, I'm not sure what the term is, the unsold product or anything else. Like how should people be thinking about all those?
Yeah. So I would say the majority of retailers that buy your product that are smaller, like I said, mom and pop, one and two door chains, that kind of thing, they're paying you with their credit card. They're giving you their card. You charge it right before you ship. Keep it on file. You ship. Done. I would say a very common payment term is called net 30. They pay you in 30 days. This is going to be your mid-range retailers, 10 doors, 50 doors, 100 doors. And then I think when you roll to the bigger guys, the Nordstrom, the Buckle, that kind of thing, you might be looking at net 60 plus. So that's 60 days. I don't love that. It's not ideal. Sometimes you just can't say no. You don't have a lot of leverage. Like if you want to sell to Nordstrom and Nordstrom's net 60, it's take it or leave it, right? So you don't have a ton of leverage on that. But the great thing about getting that baseline going of the mom and pop shops is they're paying the bills. Like it's cash flow every month. It's so nice. And you can go after the big guys and not be so scared. And the other benefit of it, honestly, and it happened to us before, is the buyer of Nordstrom might have a daughter and she's shopping at a local boutique on a Saturday. She sees your product and she goes, oh, actually, this would be great for Nordstrom. Let me reach out to him. And boom, it worked double.
What's and again, trying to just benchmark here, the number of people who don't pay you or accounts that go bad, again, not having done this, is that something you should expect? You know, 1-2% of orders to be bad debt, you know, 5-10% for wholesale, that's probably getting up there. But what should people expect and plan for?
Yeah, it's like I would say 1-2%, but it's not super common because the majority of your accounts you're trying to charge up front. And what's cool is actually if you are a smaller brand and you don't want to float the cash, there's plenty of factors out there where they essentially will pay you up front for the PO you ship. They will collect, and then obviously they take a percentage, right? So like you pay a fee or they take a percentage. But we've used those a ton in the past at Pura Vida, and like they're super helpful when you're kind of on the fence of like, oh, I want to ship them, but I don't know if they're going to pay. Like getting a factor could be a great help.
And the factor obviously helps with the float with financing it, but do they also take the risk on the bad debt non-collection side as well?
Yeah, it's part of the deal.
Okay, nice. Yeah. I didn't realize
but
that.
I will say if there's someone that they have a history of bad debt with, they will tell you, hey, I'm sorry, but this one account, we can't float that because they haven't paid us for five other brands we're working on. So that's the only thing. But I think at that point, if they were to say to you like, hey, Andrew, these guys haven't paid us for five other brands, like you probably don't want to be selling them anyway.
No, that's great information. You want to know that up front. What about map pricing? It seems like, is that something that you're thinking about a lot? Obviously, a lot of these are, maybe they're selling them online. I'm guessing a lot of these are in retail shops, but how much time do you think and give towards map pricing for all these retailers?
Yeah, honestly, in you know, from where I come from at Pura Vida and a lot of the brands I've been helping since, is we write into the reseller agreement a MAP pricing agreement. We don't want, just for anyone that doesn't know, MAP pricing stands for minimum advertised pricing. So kind of like the backstory behind that is, like, if someone has your product in their store, you want them selling for what you suggest is retail. They can sell it for higher. That's okay. You can say, hey, I mean, just FYI, we're selling on e-com for 10. Like, you could sell it for 12. It might not work though. It's okay. Now, if they want to put it on sale for whatever reason, it's an old product, they're going out of business, I don't know what the case may be. In store is fine to an extent, but you do not want them advertising that they are lowering the price. You don't want them posting that on Facebook. You don't want them running an ad for it. And so that's what you want them to sign, because that kind of thing just tarnishes the brand.
Yeah, absolutely. Jared, I promised people up front we were going to do like a sub 30-minute crash course on wholesale, which I think you've done an amazing job of doing. Any last final thoughts? I think we covered a lot of the ground here, but any final things you'd offer to people thinking about making this a big part of their business?
Yeah, I mean, truthfully, I think I understand wholesale might be a little bit scary, right? Because there's not a whole lot of information about it online. There's not a ton of courses. It's not just like plug and play, but it's extremely valuable. I mean, that feeling you get, not only monetarily, but like when you walk into a store and you see your product in there, it's so rewarding. And I think one thing that I kind of want to like say, and I guess squash or whatever it may be, is I think a lot of people's mindset is that e-com competes with wholesale, right? Competes with retail. Because you're like, oh, well, why would we sell to stores when we sell it online? It's going to take away. And if you take one thing away from this, I will say it does not compete. They work harmoniously. Someone might go into a store and see your display. They don't buy, but they think about it. They go home, they go online, or they see an ad. Oh, I saw those guys in that store. Boom, you got a customer. And vice versa, right? Like, so these guys buy online, or they see your ad online, but they don't buy. And then they go shopping at their local Ron John or some sort of store. Oh, I got an ad for these guys. Okay, cool. Product sweet. I'm going to buy it. They can coexist and not compete.
So how do you think about, actually begs the question, for your wholesale programs, Pura Vida and other clients you work with, do you prefer to just say, hey, we are only selling wholesale to retail, you can't sell online, and that's just, you know, we're going to be the only distributor online? It seems like it's the cleanest. You lose maybe a little bit of footprint, but then you save all the hassle of trying to have, you know, enforce all the MAP and other issues online with people. Competing with other people with your own brand online just is ripe with problems. So do you tend to default to, hey, our wholesale program is for retailers in-store only?
Yeah. Yes. So that's the goal. We go after brick and mortar. When we get wholesale leads or wholesale inquiries or people reach out and they're e-com only, 99% of the time, the answer is no, because we have our own and they understand. Now, the one caveat I will say is if you're a beauty brand or a women's brand and something like Revolve reaches out to you, I would say that's worth it, right? They have clout, they have reach. That's a great place to be. But the rest of them, you know, we'll pass. And I think what we will do is sometimes if we have a great retailer, I'm going to use Ron John, for example. They were actually Pura Vida's number one retailer, I think 10 or 12 doors, and they were beating out stores that had 100 plus. So someone like that says, hey, Jared, we want to put your bracelets on our site. We'll agree to it, but in the terms, we'll just say, hey, no running ads towards it, no Google AdWords, no PPC, none of that. And they're usually on board with that. So I think that's kind of a good middle ground of like, hey, we do want you to carry, we do want you to sell online. That's totally fine. But we don't want to bid up keywords with you all day.
Got it. Jared, I love it. This has been fantastic. If people want to work with you, how can they get in touch? Where should they go? Give people some details.
Yeah, definitely. So shoot me an email. It's jaredmehr@gmail.com. jaredmehr@gmail.com. I love wholesale. Eat, sleep, and breathe it. If you ever have any ideas you want to run by, or a retailer is reaching out to you and you don't know if they would be a good look for the brand or not, shoot me an email. I'm happy to help. A lot of people paid it forward when we were starting Pura Vida out, that I'm trying to do the same now.
Amazing. And yeah, you had a glowing recommendation from someone I deeply trust in the community. So for what it's worth, you come highly recommended. Jared, thank you, man. Really appreciate it. Congrats on all the cool stuff you did with Pura Vida and also kind of striking it on your own. Appreciate all the info and good chatting.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate it. I look forward to more people sharing the love for wholesale.
If you're an entrepreneur who wants to connect with other experienced owners who are working to build a financially vibrant business alongside a rich, meaningful life, head on over to ecommercefuel.com to learn more and connect with 1,000 entrepreneurs just like you. Work hard, adventure often, and forge what matters. Look forward to seeing you again next Friday.